Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Hello and welcome to the Game Theory Podcast. I'm your host, Sam Vecini, represented by The Athletic. Today on the show, Matthew Penny is in the building, and we have an important public service announcement for everyone. Max Strus is loose. Folks, he's flying around Las Vegas, flying off of screens, making threes. Everything is happening right now in the Las Vegas Summer League. Matt Penny is here. We're going to break down what we've seen so far look like. I'm in Australia. Like, this is the first time I haven't been at Summer League in probably like 7 years, 6 years. Penny is certainly not in Las Vegas. He's in Massachusetts. And we haven't seen every game. Like, we haven't paid attention to every single thing that's happening. If we're going to be honest, like, and this says more about the amount of Castle that I've watched than about Summer League, I've probably watched more episodes of Castle in the last week than I have Summer League games, if only because Castle's like the best TV show to play video games to. It's just so dumb and silly, and it has the same beats every episode, but I digress. Penny is here. We're going to talk a little bit about the Las Vegas Summer League. Matt Penny, how you doing?
You called this at the right time, because I think your normal NBA crew is all out at Vegas, and I have watched, and I kind of feel like it's a little bit of our watching these rookies. It's like driver's ed, and they have like their learner's permits. We're making sure, like, before they get on the real road, that they know what they're doing, and then when the season starts, we'll let them run a little bit, and we'll circle back. But for now, my brain is sort of stuffed and ready to unload the clip of what I've seen and kind of my takeaways, because, oh boy, the hot takes on the Twitter machine are coming out fast and furious, if you will. So it changes by the day. It changes by the game. Like, I wrote up a bunch of stuff, and then in the background, I watched two games waiting to kind of start this and kind of throw out your stuff out the window, because so much really just shifts between what we're doing here. So you got to have some patience with us, but I think this will be a nice journey for us to go on and see what we've seen up to now.
So, like, what is your general experience with Summer League? So, like, I said, this is probably the first time that I haven't been to Las Vegas for Summer League in like 7 years at this point.
Right.
So I am a seasoned Summer League veteran in terms of the overreaction machine that happens every year. Every single time that, you know, a number one overall pick makes a three, or a second round pick goes for like 20 and 10 or something like that. What is your general experience with Summer League?
Well, my way back experience is back in the day, pre-Democratic National Convention happening in Boston, there's actually, the Summer League was here. It was at UMass Boston. So I saw LeBron James's first games. I left thinking the Celtics had hit gold with Kedrick Brown and Marcus Banks. They were the stars of the future that we drafted. I left thinking that Lenny Cook was going to be a contributing member to the team as well. So it's deep, it's dated. I'd say this Summer League and probably last year, I started watching more closely because you've been kind enough to bring me along for this draft stuff. And I kind of want to see where our takes kind of went wrong, what went right, what translated, what didn't. And this year, it's magnified even more because I feel like we've done more than ever. And that's why I think my emotions have such a wide range right now based on what's out there. And it's so much as patience. right? It's like I've dug back into some guys in the last couple of weeks just to use as a baseline. Like, Trae Young stunk in summer league. He missed his first 10 shots. His label is too small to be productive. He has a signature shoe with Adidas and signed for a max contract. LeBron's last game in the Boston summer league was 2-for-14. Steph Curry was overshadowed by Anthony Morrow. Like, we all need to pretend this podcast is kind of like a relaxation app and take a deep breath and close our eyes. And not every game and jump shot is live or die and boom or bust.
Yeah, totally agree. I think that is the number one thing here. And number two, again, as someone who has been out there quite a bit, it's important to keep in mind that this is not real basketball, first and foremost, yeah, by NBA standards.
We could all say that about the NBA, the bubble season that happened too, but I'm glad you said that as prefacing this conversation too.
And second, like, you just don't know. Look, they're out in Las Vegas right now, and I know that we're in the middle of a pandemic, but like in past years, for instance, like, it's not uncommon for dudes to like go into those games somewhat hungover.
Yeah.
Like, especially if you're on like a deal already, you're not fighting for like your basketball life. It's not uncommon for the level of play and the level of seriousness that players take in these games to not necessarily be as drastically high as what you see even in the regular season, let alone in the playoffs. So just, I don't know what it's like out there right now because of the pandemic, although I will say I've talked to some agents that were out in Vegas for USA Basketball pre-draft and everything, and they were like, oh, this is a lawless west of...
It was lawless. It seems like it's a little better. Even if you're watching on TV, it seems like most people are in masks anyway.
Yeah, I think that like at the gym, there are enough stringent codes to where like you have to be accountable for one another. I am not certain that it's that way out in the wild in Las Vegas on the Strip.
No, you're on your own out there. Yeah. It's a wild experience anyway, throwing a pandemic and a mask mandate, and I'm sure it's only intensified from there. We'll put it that way. And yeah. Look, with the Vegas thing too, the one thing I will say is kind of like a counter. Guys do play on the road at city hotspots and the big markets, and they roll out and can still score or be lackadaisical the next day. It's part of the rookie adjustment or year two adjustment is you got to play day games after night games. You want to go have fun? That's fine. You got to answer the bell and be able to play team defense the next morning or afternoon, I guess, for them.
Yeah, I think that the thing is, though, that teams don't really care about these games so much as like, oh my God, this guy was out. We have to like suspend him and like get real angry with him and like yell at him for 6 hours for being out the night before. They're gonna be like, well, it's summer league. Who cares? Go have fun, guys.
I don't know how loose it is. Teams still want to win. For me, I watch and obviously you watch the score and you follow along and the substitution patterns. It's still about development and trying rotations and seeing what rookies work well together. And then I sort of look up the end and say, oh, wow, like I didn't realize that Orlando was down 10 and lost. And now Jalen Suggs is sulking in line because he's a sore loser in a good sense. Like, he hates losing. But I'm like, all right, man, summer league. Like, they're trying out 3-guard lineups. They're trying to figure out how to use Franz Wagner. There's a bunch of different things going on here.
Oh, some guys are totally like that. Like, some guy, like Davion Mitchell right now is fucking competing his ass off. Like, he's in the gym right now working out at Impact,
putting his head through a cement wall to, like, pregame. Like, that's his type of stuff.
Right. So, look, there are guys that take it seriously. I just think there are guys that are out there in Vegas to have a good time. So, it's hit or miss for sure. Okay. So, the first person I do want to talk about is Max Strus, just because people, long-time listeners of this podcast know that I am the foremost Max Strus fan and have been since he played at DePaul. That first set of games where he was at DePaul and just came in out of, he was D2 or D3, I can't remember.
He was at Lewis, and the tie that binds us together here is my coworker Adam DeMong recruited him at Lewis. So I followed the Strus story as well because of that common connection.
I love that. So I have been an enormous Max Strus fan, and we're at the point now where I'm like pretty in on Max Strus being an NBA player. You talk to people around the league and you talk to the way that he looked in the G League. You talk to people about the way he's looked in Miami, and now in summer league. Look, I'm not saying that he's going to be like the sixth man for the Miami Heat this year or anything. I'm a believer at this point in him being a rotation player. I'm just going to say that. And then he dropped 32 today. He hit a three to win the game where he just got the ball after winning the center court tip.
Yeah, after winning is a relative term because it was kind of stolen, if you will.
A little bit.
Which I don't care. This is so grassroots basketball, by the way. Summer league
it
basketball.
Is.
Oh, it's double overtime? Yeah, it's sudden death. We're still in the NBA. I couldn't love it more because that's what we do too. After double overtime, it's like, look, we're putting 10 minutes on the clock, 1 point, and it's over. And he did. They go 1-4 flat, hits a bomb. Does the strut, I guess, talks his noise, and they win. It's a walk-off.
The true strut.
I don't know, man. I'm going on the fly here.
We love Max Strus here. This is the preeminent Max Strus podcast, I would say, and has been for like 4 years now. We're all in on Max Strus. We are very much happy to see him succeed in the NBA Summer League, where he is the Klay Thompson of Las Vegas every Summer League. It's just the best.
So yeah, somebody has to fill the role, and he did today. It wasn't a game, actually, that I was planning on watching it, and kind of like the timing of it's funky because there's games on at like 5 and 6, so I'll get home, and it's a Summer League game on, and you kind of catch up, and there's another one on another channel. So I stayed with that before switching over because it's a big comeback, and then all of a sudden he plays hero ball successfully.
Yeah, every possession with Max Strus is hero ball. it rules. I love it so much. Okay, the way that this podcast is going to work, we're going to break it up into three parts. We're going to do rookies and like the high-end rookies that look great. We're going to do guys that are too good for Summer League, such as your veterans, your second-year players that are just like, oh, yeah, they don't need to play any more games. Like, it'll be a waste of their time to play more games here. And then finally, some pleasant surprises, guys that maybe we didn't expect to do as well as they have, and they look amazing, and it's super exciting to see that. So let's start with the rookies. We got the Cade Cunningham, Jalen Green show last night, and Jalen Green's team won. No, nobody really cares about who wins at Summer League, but Jalen Green's team won. They won by 20. And it was impressive, I think, just across the board. We had all of Cade Cunningham, Jalen Green, Alperen Şengün playing substantial roles in that game and playing exceptionally well. I thought all three of them looked just really, really good, point blank.
Totally. I'd throw Josh Christopher in that mix too.
And I would too.
He's been all over the place, but I think we'd be remiss to not add him to that conversation.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And the thing that, let's start with Cade. I mean, Cade was a bit inefficient. I think that part of this is going to be a conversation about Killian Hayes and where the Killian Hayes thing seems to be going. The Pistons need to just give Cade the ball. Like, that's where we're at this point. It's been two Summer League games. It has been two games that do not matter.
And we need a change.
And we need a change. Like, we need to get serious here. We need to just let's see what it looks like. I've got, like, a game left of Summer League in the regular season. Just give us Cade, like, as the guy once. That's all I'm asking. Killian needs way more development time than what Cade does, clearly. But I just want to see it. Like, I just want Cade to get the ball, bring it up every time, run the offense. Because when he did that, God, how many open shots did Detroit miss that Cade created for them last night?
We've seen that movie a little bit. Yeah.
And like, they have enough shooting to where in the regular season, I think it's going to be fine. Like, I don't think that it's going to be anything resembling what we saw at Oklahoma State, I'm sorry. But like, man, he had, I think it was like two assists in that game. He probably should have had eight. He probably created like 12 shots for his teammates
and a bunch of hockey assists too, like the pass before the pass. And he does that stuff that doesn't necessarily show up in the box score every play, and just sort of this like offensive connector. I didn't like the pairing with Killian Hayes, especially the first game. It can work. I'm not completely running off yet, but Killian has to be less dribble dominant and just get to his move quicker. And maybe part of it for us and me especially is I'm just so accustomed after the year at Oklahoma State that somehow, some way, Cade's influencing every play on the offense. And that first game, there was just way too many where he sat in the corner and watched. And I think because of that, the Cade takes the first game are hot and heavy. He hit a couple threes, and it seemed like he may have 30. Then it cools down, a couple bad turnovers. He dribbled it high, lost the ball, lacked some touch on floaters. Maybe he's a bust. What a first game. That was number one. And meanwhile, down the street, Jalen Green has, what, the 23, the first 23-5 in his debut, 9 for 18 from the field. Yeah. And then they match up. And I thought one of the cool things was they matched up. Like, they guarded each other. It wasn't this is Cade versus Jalen. They were squaring up back and forth, and it was hyped up to start, and it was slow. And then Cade hit a three when Jalen Green gets caught in a screen and goes under. And you could tell that Cade had heard, and it was influenced his game, and heard how good Jalen had been. And he took it personally once he got going, had a hard drive and finished, driving dish for a score, flexed to the crowd. I mean, my kind of holdups with Cade a little bit, as positive I think it was, I didn't think he played great, but the numbers were still good enough. You can't lose by 20. He's going to be mostly this hang dribble, hesitation, pullback jumper guy rather than that bursty lead guard coming off of ball screens. And we have to be okay with that. If he's the conductor of the offense, it's not always going to be highlights, like you said. And oftentimes it's the smart, sound decision that may not pop.
No, I think that's totally right. And like, people were comparing him to Chris Middleton pre-draft, and he's just like, I think, a drastically better prospect than Chris Middleton was. He's going to have to keep getting better to reach where Middleton has reached, obviously, but like, where they were when they were younger, it's just not even comparable.
Right.
But I understand why that name comes up, because Middleton does have a bit of that, like in terms of just like a bit of a boring metronomic player. Right. Guy that makes the right decision, not necessarily the flashy decision. So, look, I see no reason to be worried about Cade Cunningham. He didn't get to the foul line in that game against Houston. I would like to see him put a little bit more pressure on the rim. Part of that is, again, look, nobody thinks Killian Hayes can shoot. Nobody thinks Sekou Dumbuya can shoot. Nobody thinks Tyler Cook can shoot. Right. And like, even someone like Luka Garza, I think can shoot, but he doesn't get defended like that right now in the NBA. Like, he doesn't get defended as like a true pick and pop threat, even in summer league games. And then like, nobody thinks Servetus is good at basketball. So like,
Jesus,
I mean, stray shots, but I'm sorry.
There are some ricochets. There's some stray ones, but you're right. And he got in the lane just a couple times, and one time, like, KJ Martin ate his lunch. Just, it was a jump ball, right, like at the rim. He had an offensive foul, kind of doing like the drifting, floating Cade thing that Oklahoma State, they'd blow the whistle, and he just never wanted to get in foul trouble. And it's like, oh, blocker charge. Block. Okay, he's still on the floor. Right. Luckily, in summer league, you get 10 fouls. So if you foul out of this, like, you get some bigger issues and bigger problems. The court was a little bit more spaced. Maybe I oversold how spaced it would be for him without that necessarily like first explosive first step. Maybe that improves when you're playing in the NBA with, like you said, more shot spacers out there.
Yeah.
But I was still encouraged. I watched late last night, and I walked away and thought he still played well, and there's a lot of room to grow, and they're playing 40-minute games. He still had, like you said, 20 points, 7 rebounds, a couple assists.
Yeah, like, I mean, he's going to be playing with Kelly Olynyk, Jeremy Grant, Isaiah Stewart. Like, I don't know what's going on with Isaiah Stewart, like why he isn't playing in summer league. I just haven't been paying attention enough, essentially, to know that. Like, those guys, I think, all have like some sort of gravity in a way to where they're going to just create more space for Cade than Sekou Dumbuya and Tyler Cook and like Servetus and Jamarco Pickett and guys like that, right? So, yeah, I'm not worried about that. Let's talk about Jalen Green. Everything that we thought is a scorer. I'm worried about everything else still. He's shown some flashes as a passer, but like, for instance, Detroit last night kind of threw two at the ball at times, and I thought that he struggled a little bit with like how to react to that pressure from high level defenders. But like, that'll come. That's a thing that comes with time and with experience. That's not a thing that I'm worried about long term. Just a ridiculous scorer, putting pressure on the basket, yeah, he's, like I said, pre-draft, the surest bet to average 20 points in the NBA that I've evaluated.
It's unbelievable how efficient he's become if you watch this whole thing. If you watched him from grassroots to USA Basketball, he has such a better pace around him. And yep. he doesn't go a million miles per hour. He had a step back that first game on the left elbow with balance, and it looks so natural. And then at the end of the quarter, he has an ISO called for him, and he gets his own bucket. And that's why there's hype about him, because you need that at the end of the game, end of the shot clock, in the playoffs to get 2 points, and he can do it for you. And that second game, a little slow to start, then he hits a contested three in a tight window, as Doris Burke put it, and then he scores on a drive the next play. He gets going in such a hurry, and it's so effortless, where I thought Cade was working a lot and sometimes like overworking yep. for buckets, and some guys need to do 100 moves and pumps and spins. You look twice, and Jalen Green has 15 points. That's just the way he is.
Yeah, that's a really, really good way to put it. It does look effortless with Jalen Green, especially on this level. Whereas with Cade, it is a constant battle a little bit to where he has to work to get to his spot because he doesn't have that athleticism. Like with Jalen,
right?
Jalen, like half speed Jalen is full speed Cade in terms of first step, right? If anything, it's Jalen gearing back, and that's something that I noticed in the G League that he really, really slowed down like midway through that G League month in the bubble. He started to get that experience, and it really improved. I think he is every bit the scorer we thought. Has Alperen Şengün turned you yet, Matt Penny? Come on.
I'm smiling, and if I had dug deeper and knew that he whispered sweet nothings to the basketball before he took free throws, I think I would have ranked him a little bit higher. Yeah. Because he is such a basketball character. Do you see his pregame routine? No, he does.
No.
He has like a split at center court, and he's like not speaking much English. He's just running around out there. They call him Alpy. He was better than I thought he would be, straight up. He scored out ISOs. He hit deep threes. He dropped off a couple assists. Still an angles guy, and I thought he was exposed some defensively on switches, and he'll get his blocks because of how well he reacts and places himself off the floor. And we were texting, and you said, the explosion's there. It's just not necessarily the length, so that's yep. why. But he had four blocks each game. The jumps aren't astronomical, but the timing is there. And the same with yep. alley-oops. And he's fine as a rotating help defender on traps. It's just a different story on flat-out switches. I also liked how he's paired next to KJ Martin a lot, who's more of that yep. switching athletic guy. And I got to throw a little haterade out there because, you know, that's just in my nature. And I'm not trying to be a super hater because he's been great. Let's if that's a takeaway, like, I've been wrong so far, he's been great. He was guarding Balsa, Koprivica, Luka Garza, and Seiko Udombia. Those are the guys that he dominated in the Turkish Super League, right? Like that's yeah. kind of like the level of competition. So I wasn't surprised for that just because that's the level and caliber of player, and that's not a shot at those guys, but it's those guys that are overseas that he's been beating up at as a 19-year-old. I have to see it against the actual NBA. Summer League isn't real life, but for sure a promising start to the NBA experience with Alpy.
For me, it's the way that he's been clearly able to process the game at higher speed, because Summer League is a higher speed game than the Turkish League, right?
Oh, yeah.
Just in terms of the athleticism. That processing ability hasn't changed, really. He also hit a fucking three from the logo, which, like...
it was deep. I was like, with every basket, I was like, oh, I'm going to hear about that one. Oh, okay. There was one where he jumped up, and I'm like, where are you going, idiot? And he just, like, dropped it off for an assist. I'm like, going to hear about that one. I was keeping a mental tally in my head.
Well, the craziest one was the one that got called back. It was like a hockey assist. He saw Jalen Green like cutting behind him, kind of, and yeah. threw the nutmeg pass. And Jalen had no idea this pass was coming, but like clearly just has that reactive ability to where he's like, oh shit, like I can grab this ball, but he hadn't reestablished himself back in play. So he kicks it out for a corner three, and then the corner three goes in, but they call it off. I mean, like, you can just see that Şengün's gears, like, that's a special dude in terms of the way yeah. he thinks about basketball and the way that he sees angles and understands the way that defenders are playing him and just the creativity he has as well. I think he's going to be really good. Like, look, I had him as a top 10 guy in the class. Like, I get that I'm high on him. I'm not quite as high as John Hollinger, but I'm pretty darn close. Yeah, Alperen
Şengün. I don't know. Hollinger had him, like, fourth or something, like, wild.
John's I literally tweeted him yesterday that he's like carrying his nuts around the Thomas and Mack Center in a wheelbarrow like Randy Marsh.
Well, yeah, it's an early victory lap. That's all. The stuff's there. Like when he caught that one at the elbow and the floor kind of cleared out and it was ice, so he faced up and went and dunked. I said, as the season progressed overseas, he was doing that more.
Yep.
And I remember watching a few clips of him like faking dribble handoffs and going between his legs and then dunking in the lane. I said, all right, well maybe he's starting to put all the pieces together. But when he did that and a few passes, a few threes, it's kind of a different prospect. But it's still strange for me because he doesn't labor getting up and down the court, but he's not really beating you up and down the court. But then when he gets there, he's got a whole bag of tricks of he's going to slice and dice you.
Yeah, no. He's a real, actual, like, playmaker with the ball in his hands. Like, he can do shit with the ball. He's not just, like, some pick-and-roll big who finishes. Like, he's... There is a lot of Domantas Sabonis-y stuff there. Like, he's going to be really good offensively. I am in no way concerned about him offensively. You wanted to give a couple quick words on Christopher, though. He's been good. He still can't shoot, yeah. But, like, he's been really, really effective as a passer, as a ball handler and creator, and as a defender. He's going to have to shoot at some point, but, like, he looks really good right now. He looks really, really good.
He did more than I thought he would, frankly. I mean, and he came out there and he looked like the Mayfair High School, Josh Christopher. The tape at Arizona State, the first game or two, and we had a mock draft. We had him like 20th. That felt appropriate. Like, he was good.
Yep.
And then throughout the year, like, he didn't. I mean, my biggest takeaway on watching some of the film was, oh, wow, he changed his shoes at halftime. And it wasn't there where here's this scorer like Cam Thomas who's scoring 20 a game that's plug and play. Fine. With Josh Christopher, I just didn't know. And he's really played up being a good teammate, and they mic'd him up. He was very vocal. He was 5-for-15 from the field, but had 15 points and 7 assists the second game. Like, that's a crazy amount of assists for Josh Christopher. So it's a really good young core, and it's funny because of how bad the Rockets' regular season was last year, and now their fan base is going nuts because of how well they played these two summer league games with their young core of guys, and Gruba not even playing yet.
Yeah, no, and it looks like Gruba is going to come over, which is cool, too. It looks like Real had a thing yesterday where they said they released him. So the buyout must have gotten handled and everything. Okay, other rookies. So we've got Jalen Suggs, who we're just going to take a victory lap on. Like, let's just be real.
We are. Yeah. He showed us everything. He scored. He's passed. He dove for 50-50 balls. Pulled up from three. Had 9 rebounds that first game. Took over when it mattered. I liked him better on the ball. I didn't like it. Sort of our arcade argument. I didn't like it when Cole Anthony started the offense, though Cole did move it better than I thought he would. The world didn't get to see more of this scoring grassroots version of Suggs that I have and a lot of people did pre-Gonzaga. And to see him have 20 points consistently and kind of be this really alpha now and asserting himself, I wasn't surprised. And it was so Jalen Suggs. The first game, 30 seconds left. It's 83-83. He's a defender on a 2-on break and, like, blocks a shot and breaks it up. They go to overtime.
Yeah.
So he's going to impact winning so much and takes it personally when they lose. And he was like a free safety on defense, breaking up plays. He really was everywhere. I felt good about having him second after that first game. They just lost, but it was a similar box score, very balanced across the board.
Yeah, he got to play. I watched a little bit of this game kind of as we've been podcasting and, you know, before we started here. And, you know, it has been happening while we've been recording. He played a little bit more on ball in this game and definitely distributed a little bit more, which was interesting. Like, he's gotten to show, like, in these couple of games now, kind of the full repertoire of who he is. He had a ridiculous putback dunk in this game.
Oh, yeah.
Just right on Lamar Stevens's back. It was absurd. But yeah, really good. Jalen Suggs, hot take. Really good at basketball, really competitive.
Hot take. Put a few bucks down for rookie of the year.
Ooh, I like that. I'm not quite there, but I like it. I'm there.
Look, who else are they adding that are going to get shots? Like,
oh,
really?
He's definitely like getting numbers. He's putting Jonathan up numbers. Isaac?
Like, I think this could be, as much as I preface by saying don't overreact, this would kind of be like the Jalen Suggs show, like you see in February too. I don't know how much is going to change. The numbers won't be as crazy. The usage won't be as high, but he's going to have as much of an opportunity to replicate this.
Yeah. I mean, like, Franz Wagner was okay. nothing. I don't have, like, this isn't the environment for Franz Wagner to succeed. It's so, like,
perfect way to put it.
I almost don't care what he does in this because it's, again, like, not real basketball.
No, I had a media person that I respect a lot text me 3 minutes into the game, 3 minutes into his first game, Penny, I love you. Wagner's an all-time bust. I said, it has been 3 minutes. 3 minutes. I was looking at 7 minutes left. I said, wait, they're playing 12-minute quarters? No, it's 10. 3 minutes. I'm not going to be a total apologist for him, but the summer league isn't for him. I mean, at Michigan, a lot was system-based in the half court, and he can be that maestro there with freedom to do it. But when the games attract me and go a million miles per hour, it's not his strengths aren't going to show through. I like some of his passes. Jumper has to be better. He was actually much better in the game that just happened here. Had a few backdoor cuts for dunks, and he hit a few better passes. The shot has to improve, but I'm not jumping ship on a guy when this just isn't his style of play.
Yeah, and, like, if anything, like, I feel like I was a little bit more down on Franz throughout the pre-draft process. Like, I had him at, like, 14 or 15 on my board, I think, versus the consensus top 10 that he seemed to be. I get it. I think he's going to be a good basketball player, but, like, I don't really care what this looks like for him. And it's the same with the team they just played, the Cavs. Like, I don't really care what summer league this year looks like for Evan Mobley. He has no chance of being efficient right now because he's just too thin. Like, it's not a comment on who he's going to be long term as an NBA player. And he's shown some real flashes as a passer. Like,
totally.
As much as we saw late in the year, particularly with USC, he's shown some very ridiculous flashes as a passer so far in summer league. And that's the kind of stuff that I care to see. I don't really care that he shoots 5 for 15 from the field right now because he's just so skinny that it's just not gonna be a great time for him in summer league.
Had his welcome to the NBA moment early. The first game, too, he caught and turned. I'm going to dunk this. And KJ Martin's like, no, you are not, and punched it away. And he did show some nice things in stretches. I was worried about the turnovers in the post or the first game when Josh Christopher kind of switched on to him. He had a dunk on Şengün in the paint. Has really nice explosion with his feet set. And this last game they happened, they ran a lot more of the offense through him. And the commentator said they're using him as like a point center of sorts with dribble handoffs and side pick and rolls. I mean, defensively, he's already much closer there, especially Lattery. He recovers when teammates are beat to protect the rim. He'd saved a couple plays or two. It's just it's going to take time. It's weight. He had a quick 10 points here. It's much more physical, but he seemed at ease game two and kind of get the game one jitters out, and just have to be careful not to really like box score scout either, because there were stretches he looked like he more than belonged and looked like he
could be a
warranted number whatever top three pick in the draft. So big stake long to develop. I'm not really worried about what he's doing right now or not right now.
Some of the flashes athletically are ridiculous. Like, he's just so much more coordinated than 99% of the bigs in the NBA, maybe 95% of the bigs in the NBA. It's going to be fine. He is playing next to a center right now in Fiondu Kabengele, and I don't think that has worked super well. That probably is more of a function of Kabengele than of Mobley playing the four. But
wait, so pause. So are you worried about then the next step during the regular season with him next to a center?
Yeah, I am. I still am. Okay. Okay. We'll see how it goes, though. Like, it'll...
Fair.
I think it's probably more a function of Fiondu Kabengele just not being an NBA player than, like, Evan Mobley being bad or, like, this being a bad fit or anything like that. But my hesitations about Evan Mobley playing the four have not been changed by what we've seen so far, I would say.
No. Has to shoot. A couple of threes look bad. A couple of them looked okay. Has to shoot. Get your reps in.
Okay. Let's take a quick commercial break and we'll be back. We're talking about players securing the bag when they get drafted in June. I need to tell you about securing your internet connection with NordVPN. What is a VPN? It's a virtual private network. A VPN reroutes your traffic through a remote server, encrypting it in the process. This is going to hide your location from your ISP, hackers, and from other people looking to get your data. Everybody knows that I watch as many movies as I can. I think I've probably watched like 40 or 50 this year already. Some movies are blocked in Australia. It's really hard for me to watch them. For instance, anybody who's tried to get their hands on Godzilla Minus One recently knows that it's basically only available in Japan. And you need a VPN if you want to go to like Amazon Prime or something to be able to watch it. So when I'm blocked from watching a movie in Australia, I just queue up my VPN. I change my location and it unlocks a category of movies from all of my favorite streaming services. As somebody who's always on the go, connecting to public Wi-Fi is a necessity, but it's also just a goldmine for hackers. That's where Nord comes in, creating a secure tunnel for my data to travel through away from prying eyes. There are other benefits to Nord as well. Your browsing history is yours and yours alone. Your virtual location is masked from those who seek to track your every move. It's like having a force field around your online identity. NordVPN also goes the extra mile with threat protection. Malware, trackers, dodgy ads, they're all going to get blocked. It's like having a shot blocking big around your devices 24/7. Game Theory is offering an exclusive deal for NordVPN. You're going to get 4 extra months and up to 75% off subscriptions. Just head to nordvpn.com/gametheory, GAMETHEORY, to claim your account. Plus, with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee, you've got nothing to lose and everything to gain. Go to nordvpn.com/gametheory to claim your account. nordvpn.com/gametheory. Guys, I can't emphasize enough how much I use Nord every day of my life. Nord is a fantastic sponsor for us. So go support Nord. And it's a great product. So nordvpn.com/gametheory. All right, the last guy in the top five that we have not talked about is Scotty Barnes. And I think Scotty Barnes has looked pretty good. That first game, he had like 18, 10, and 5. I don't know that like he is going to be some crazy scorer still, even though he had 18 in that opener. But you know what? I still am happy I had Scotty Barnes at 6, I would say.
Right. I think he played the first game or before the rest of the guys, and he was really good. And I was shocked to see he took 18 shots. That most he took in a single game last year at Florida State was 13. So he's already surpassed that in one game in the NBA. Yeah. And he had it going early with...
No, it's clear they're telling him, like, go shoot.
Shoot. I mean, yeah. Putbacks, loose balls. He made plays in transition. He threw a really pretty left-hand advance pass up the court. And he gets in this groove, and you get the full Scotty experience of him celebrating, dancing, looking at his hand after baskets. It felt like he was having fun. 1 for 4 from 3, a couple bad misses. The one he hit looked okay. And a lot of, see, the Raptors know what they're doing on Twitter. I still value the guys we had ahead of them. I had ahead of them. But, yeah, promising. I want to see how it looks next to Pascal Siakam and OG and what they have rolling out there. And as a side note, or as an aside, Malachi Flynn was awesome. He had 23 points on 8 of 13 shooting.
Yeah, we're going to get to him. We're going to get to him.
I don't know if that factored into passing on Suggs, maybe, but he looked good enough where, okay, this could be a thing as a backup behind VanVleet and Gary Trent.
Yeah, Malachi Flynn is really good at basketball, and anyone who followed this podcast last year will know that we were very high on, or at least I was certainly very high on Malachi Flynn. Yeah, he's going to be really good. Yeah, Scotty, you know, like you said, the joy was there. I'm still skeptical on him being as good of a finisher around the basket as his tools would indicate he should be. I still don't have any faith really in the 3-point shot. That does not look any better. I don't think he looks more confident taking them, but
right.
I don't think it looks better right now. I feel good about having Scotty Barnes at 6. I think he's a great player. But I feel like Scotty Barnes at 6 is still where I should be on this.
Yeah, I'm okay with that. I think I had him at 7. I'm confident with guys we had there. 7 or 8.
Okay. Next up, where do you want to go? Because there are a few different directions. We've seen quite a bit of Jonathan Kuminga and Moses Moody at this point. Do we want to maybe go there?
Yeah, we can. Kuminga, he looked like a beast for many possessions, and he was just bodying Franz Wagner. And as much as the setting is not for Wagner, it is for Jonathan Kuminga. and he has a few games under his belt because they actually played in that Sacramento Summer League for a couple.
Yep.
And it's open play where he can go like he did in the Ignite in high school and grassroots, and he's going to look impressive there. He can catch and go downhill and through his man and bully a little bit. Common theme, needs to shoot it. Can't be 0 for 4 from 3 every game. I might be starting the campaign to play Jonathan Kuminga at the 5, and I mean that as a compliment. He's going to find his way on the floor for Golden State because he has been. I never wavered. I thought he was kind of in that top 5 conversation for the year. Some people went lower on him toward the end and toward the G League, but I was enthused.
Yeah, we both ended up with him at 5, if I remember correctly. Yeah. Yeah, like you said, this is his environment. Like, this is a great spot for him to be successful because he can use that powerful athleticism to get to the rim in a way that he might struggle a little bit more against real NBA competition and strength and length and athleticism. Yeah, the jumper needs to improve. That's just kind of where we're at. But he looks like an NBA frame, NBA body. Looks like he's going to be able to at least contribute as a rookie, I would say.
For sure. For sure. And just to segue into Moses Moody, it balanced nicely as a compliment to Kuminga. The first summer league game here, not Sacramento, he was 6 for 13 for the field, 2 for 5 from 3. And from Sacramento and to here, he hits open threes. He uses length well to extend around the basket. Just sort of the player we thought he was as a compliment.
Yep. Yeah, no, exactly who we thought Moses Moody was, and I'm yawning like as Moses Moody, as we talk about Moses Moody, and Moses might be like another one of those metronomic players who is just who he is, right? I don't think it's an accident that in that game against the Magic, which they lost, in overtime, if I remember correctly. Does that sound right to you?
Yes. That was the game that Suggs broke up the thing in the backcourt and they lost in overtime. Yeah.
Yeah, my brain is like a little bit fried at this point.
You're right.
So I thought it was interesting that Moody and Kuminga, when they were on the court together, the Warriors like were clearly the better team in that game. They looked like they were drastically better. You look at like plus minus, single game plus minus, you know, don't use it all the time, right? But Moses Moody was a plus 19, Jonathan Kuminga was a plus 15. The other three starters for the Warriors, Selim Mawugbe, who I frankly do not know who that is, and that's saying a lot because I know who everyone else on the Warriors roster is.
Everyone else in summer league.
Yeah. Justinian Jessup and Gary Payton, they were all negatives in terms of plus minus, and Kuminga and Moody were at least plus 15. So I think that actually kind of goes to say a lot about how effective these guys are on this summer league court, at least. They've played really, really well. They've played well on defense, I think. Even Kuminga, he's still not always available rotationally, but I think he's like, he seems to like maybe have gotten some of the criticism pre-draft of like, hey, I have to get down to defensive stance, and he's doing that more. So that's nice. They've just been really good so far.
Yeah, Kuminga showed that extra effort, even if it's like a little bit slower. He's still putting that burst into trying to close out and trying to scramble and box out. There's a higher, care level than there was at stretches during the G League.
Let's go to Zaire Williams now, though, because Zaire Williams, I think, has been one of the pleasant surprises. I think you and I both thought that Zaire Williams would probably take some time to figure things out at Summer League even and in the NBA. Zaire Williams has looked like pretty ready to play at this point. Like I don't know if he's going to be like a rotation player this year because he is very skinny, and that NBA game is drastically different than this one in terms of the physicality and the length and everything that will be presented to him. But so far, he looks like everything the Memphis Grizzlies could have asked for when drafting him.
He shot it well, and the jumper looks better. And the jumpers he have, they're a lot of like comfort shots. He's not really going to the rim and using his body or lack of strength to score. But he hit a couple floaters, and I saw the post-game interview after the first game, and the interviewer said something that he played with more energy, and Zaire said, the coaches told me to go out there and cause havoc. And it seemed like that. It seemed like he was trying to be a little bit more active. He's been very efficient. He hit some jumpers this second game that just happened. Had a bad turnover down the stretch, but certainly a lot better than what we saw at Stanford. It's difficult because now he's one of the guys that, how do I rethink my evaluation of players where if they don't have a good year, and even Josh Christopher too, they look completely different out there. And we can always just say the space of the court, the mesh of the court, but they look like different prospects. They look like the high school guys we're kind of talking about, not the players that played 25 games. We're kind of questioning like, hey, where do we slot this guy in the first round? Is he a first round pick? So it's something that's kind of twisted my brain around a bit too.
Yeah, I ended up way higher on Zaire than what I guess the consensus ended up being. Like, I think I had him like right in the same range as Franz Wagner. So there were flashes of that at Stanford, though, like the ability to get to his spot. With Josh Christopher, there were flashes too. I just worried about like the overall level of selfishness that he portrayed at Arizona State and how that would work at the next level. That selfishness is gone already from his game, like very quickly at Summer League. Like that is the biggest mindset change of any player I've seen at Summer League this year, is Christopher just being so much more willing to play with his teammates and pass and be an effective distributor and playmaker for others. In the case of Zaire, like the flashes, I think they were there at Stanford. You could see them. And he's just simplified his game now in a real way to where, while playing with Desmond Bain, Xavier Tillman, like some of the best guys that you can play with at the Summer League level, it's a little bit easier for him right now, I think.
It's a great point, and maybe that's part of it. Maybe it's he's just this super uber elite complementary piece, and I was searching for the alpha that maybe he not necessarily is right now, can develop into. And it wasn't that all the time at Stanford. They needed to be. And I told you, I watched that last game against USC, and it was terrible. He was 1-for-8, had a million turnovers, like his airballing shots. His shot looks like completely different here. And he also made some comment after the first game, just something you don't think about. He said, it's the first time I heard fans since high school. It's like, what? And then you think about it, it's like, well, you're right. You just most of those games just either didn't have anybody or it's just immediate family and friends. And you hear three or four people yelling. That's different than, I know the Thomas and Mack Center isn't the Staples Center, but it still gives you that extra little adrenaline boost when you're out there.
Yeah, no, totally. Okay, let's finish on Davion Mitchell. Davion Mitchell looks like every bit of what we thought Davion Mitchell was coming into the draft.
Everyone's favorite Summer League player, is that fair? Producing on both ends, just a pest on defense, tight handle, kept his man on skates a lot with those rake back dribbles, hit the gas when his man freezes, and it just lived up to the nickname of Off Night. He denies the ball, he jumps for steals, he's one of these guards that secures a turnover that immediately looks for teammates. I know there's a logjam of guards in Sacramento. There's no way he doesn't find time there. I mean, he had 10 points, 9 assists, 0 turnovers, and just drove James Bouknight crazy for an entire game.
Yeah, no. I will say this too with him. Like, the three-level scoring game even looks a little bit better than what we saw at Baylor this year. He is really finding an effective way to get to his spots in the mid-range and knocking down a pull-up jumper from the mid-range. Guys go under ball screens. He's just pulling from three with total reckless abandon. And, like, he sort of did that at Baylor, but it looks even more confident now. It's going to be impossible to keep him off the court. I think we both had Davion in the top 10, even while like there were concerns about him that people kept bringing up and bringing up. I frankly think that there were not five more effective basketball players in college last season than Davion Mitchell, and that's going to continue to be the case.
When people get hung up on the age and you're too old and maybe he's at a ceiling. He was a guy we didn't argue. We agreed on that maybe 10 is too high in the grand scheme of things, but he's still going to have an effect on the game, an effect on winning out there. I didn't think he was going to be one of these older statesmen college guys that get drafted and 3 years later it was, oh, what a regrettable pick. They took him there. Like, that guy's just, his intensity just shines through on everything he does.
Yep, totally. Okay, let's take a quick commercial break, and then we'll dive into the rest of our little spiel here. Okay, the second category of Summer League players is the guys who are too good for Summer League, the guys who have just stood out as being like, okay, why are you here? You're definitely just beyond this level. There are a few players that have already hit my like radar for that. Malachi Flynn is certainly one. Malachi Flynn is too good for this already.
Like, you gotta go.
Yeah, there is no reason for Malachi Flynn to play another summer league game. Like, he is ridiculous.
I was kind of hoping for Malachi and a few of the guys that we've noticed here. Is there going to come a point in time where an assistant coach just gets like a phone call and like, pulls him off the court? Like, yeah, man, you got to go. Like, take your stuff, pack up, you got to go. Like a reality show, and you get voted off. Like, yeah, you're out of here.
Pack your shit. Let's go.
Yeah, get your bag. They're waiting for you.
By the way, like as we're talking about this, like Malachi Flynn, oh, we haven't watched any of this game. The Raptors Warriors, at least I don't think you have. He's played 10 minutes and is like 0-for-4 from the field.
See, but that's why I said we have to record without watching, and I have my back to the TV, because like another guy that we'll talk about was like 2-for-6 or 2-for-10. That I was like, oh, steal the draft. Yeah, not so much, not so fast.
Yeah, no, like I kind of don't really care, though. Like, Malachi Flynn is... You can just see the tempo that he plays with is just different than these guys. He's just so ready to be on the court in such a real way. The confidence, the defensive awareness, the experience that he seems to already have playing in the NBA in terms of the reads that he needs to make as the point guard. Yeah, Malachi Flynn is too good for summer league at this point.
Too good. Too good.
Okay, yes,
I don't think much to add.
I'll give you the Celtics, because I know you've watched...
You know what, shockingly, like, I haven't. I know Aaron Naismith is too good for summer league, because he had 30. He had, like, immediately had 20 when I turned the game on. Like, he's toying with guys out there. Peyton Pritchard's been way better. Like, Peyton Pritchard was legitimately in the Celtics rotation, like, all year long.
Yeah,
no. The joke, but, like, he was all rookie team honorable mention the first 2 months of the year. I'm glad he went out there. I like when guys just answer the call and say, hey, I want to play, I want to get better, I want to get reps in. Him and Aaron Naismith shouldn't be there. It's okay. Like, I'm glad they are. I'm glad they're showing what they're able to do, but don't have to be there.
Yeah, Pritchard was the guy particularly for me where I was just like, oh, yeah, this guy is way too good for this level. Just obscenely good for this level. Naismith is probably, like, right at the line in terms of, like, too good for summer league, but you know, maybe could use the experience. Peyton Pritchard, I mean, he's just like toying with dudes out there at this level. Absolutely ridiculous.
It's sort of like when a guy shows up to the gym and you're like, oh, that guy's not very good, and just like roast everybody for 50 and then walks off. That's been the Peyton Pritchard experience. I agree. Aaron Naismith needs more of these reps as kind of this guy, because the Celtics need that punch of offense off the bench that they've searched for the last 2 years or so, and they've made a couple signings here in free agency, but you still need him to give you something.
Okay. Next up, who's up for you? Do you have anyone that really stood out in this regard?
Patrick Williams, Chicago Bulls. The one that stood out for me.
Yeah.
He had 30 points on 10 of 23 shooting, 7 rebounds. Shot looks a lot smoother, too. Less of a moon ball. And he was cooking guys on a pick and roll. He pulled up a mid-range, turned the corner. It might sound a little weird, but it was like an NBA player, like playing down a division almost. Like, he just looked so much bigger, physically stronger, and moved differently. And I have to shout out, I saw a tweet today on Twitter from Chucking Darts that called out his age, or the age of most rookies, and he is younger than Jalen Suggs, Evan Mobley, and Scottie Barnes, which is pretty wild. Yeah. Because if you watched and saw one of those guys do what he just did, you would say he just found like the second coming. Like, this guy's unbelievable. So it also kind of gives credence to what we talk about a little bit of taking risks on guys early, sort of like the Josh Primo thing too, because if you're younger, get a year in the right developmental system, year two, if Josh Primo comes back looking anything like this, it'll be talked about he was a steal at 12. I know Patrick Williams went way higher than that, but still, you kind of see why the train of thought is maybe go a little bit younger, take the kind of more raw player that shows flashes, not all there, and hope that you hit on it.
Yeah, no, all reasonable. I think Patrick Williams definitely fits this category of way too good for summer league. I also think that like it's beneficial for him to play summer league because he is still so young, and getting all of those ball screen like opportunities and reads that he's getting, they're just going to be invaluable for him moving forward. But he definitely fits this mold. I mean, even in a game where like he struggled to shoot it, the first game against New Orleans where Trey Murphy had like a billion threes or wherever, whatever.
He was great too.
Yeah. Like it's still very clear that he is better than most of the guys out there, and he is just gaining experience getting those ball screen reads right every single time he's on the court.
Being the takeover guy and making shots and reads and decisions when it matters. That game was close against the Spurs down the stretch and kept going back to him and wanted him to be that dominant guy out there. So in Chicago, maybe didn't have as many reps as that. He did get some good compliments and feedback on the rookie year. And if you continue to expand what he does already, he'll be talked about maybe in a year or two as somebody that's one of the better players in that draft, potentially.
So the next guy for me was Emmanuel Quickley. He dropped like over 30 in there. I don't know if it was their first game or what it was. I think it might have been. Was it the Scottie Barnes game? I think it was the Raptors game, right? No. It was the second game.
I think it was the second game.
Yeah, but you know, another guy where like it's beneficial for him to get like ball screen reads and everything. But even in the game where he shot 5 of 17 from the field, it was just like the 3-point shot wasn't falling, and we know that Emmanuel Quickley can shoot. Even the ball screen reads were ridiculous. Like, he had 8 assists in that game. consistently made the right play every single time down the court. Then the next game, he goes out and drops 30. Yeah, I mean, Emmanuel Quickley, like, look, he got his 2 games in Summer League. They'll be beneficial long term. I don't think he needs to be out there again.
Right. Did you feel the same way about Obi Toppin?
I didn't. I thought that Obi could still use a little bit of work.
All right. Well, at the very least for Obi, he seemed so much more confident and believed in his game. And he was free to run wild for steals and dunks and use his physicality to his advantage out of those isolations and transition. And the moves he made were very simple. And sometimes older players, when they get back to Summer League or year 2 of the NBA, they try to work on new stuff. And it'll never be effective in actual games. He didn't do that. Yeah. It was 1 or 2 dribbles, face-ups, finishes, and even a little bit better on the defensive end, too.
Yeah, I agree with you that he looks really, really good. Like, I don't want to minimize that, necessarily. Obi Toppin looks like an NBA player out there, for sure, in a way that midway through last year, like, people were worried about, even a little bit, if you remember. And he had the great playoff run.
People were jumping ship early.
Yeah, he had the great playoff run against Atlanta, and you know, so far he looks really good with the Knicks in Summer League. I don't know that he would quite fit into like this mold that we're talking about, but he's been really, really good, and I want to like definitely call him out as well, because you're definitely right about that.
And the other one I kind of had was Desmond Bain, and I say that with kind of a laugh because he wasn't nearly as good game too. But the first game, he had 32 points in 29 minutes. He was 6 of 8 for 3. And like Peyton Pritchard, just sort of toying with guys, like fake setting screens, coming back to the ball, pulling up from 3 off the bounce. He was blowing by guys in the break. Then he had this closing ability. He had 3 threes in the last like 3 minutes of that game. He looked a level above what he was playing against out there.
Yeah, and you know, that's 100% right. Like, Desmond Bane, like, is just getting on ball reps at this point. Like, he's too good for this level at this point. The other guy that I thought looked really good was Jaden McDaniels in the game that they played against San Antonio. Just was like tearing everything up defensively, and on top of it was actually shooting really well. Look, he could maybe play another game of Summer League, I think.
He's pulled off the stage.
But yeah, we're getting close to maybe pulling him off the stage. It's funny, too. Like, the other guy that stood out in that regard for me is, like, Jalen Noel. Like, Jalen Noel is, and we could say this about Cam Thomas as well, I think, with Brooklyn. Like, just ridiculous scorers. And above this level as a scorer, for sure.
As a scorer, yes.
Yes. And as like a playmaker with ball in hand, but they need so much work on the other stuff that like gotta be out there. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like gotta
those guys still gotta play because they want McDaniels to take a jump too. And he did more off the dribbles, sort of a playmaker. And I still have visions of the McDaniels of past of he was at one time the number one recruit in the country, and he's trying to bring that back into the picture of some of the stuff he's working on out there too.
Okay. Anyone else that you think really just has stood out as being too good for this level?
Let me like run down. Kind of, we talked quickly. Talked Tobin. Jeez, Obi Toppin. I wouldn't say too good, but I'd say looks good enough. Is Sadiq Bey, the crafty kind of gets a shot off. I thought he looked more physically mature and seasoned. those are the guys that, like, there's been decent numbers. Like, Tyrell Terry put up 22 points, but I'd say similar argument. He needs it. You know, Tyrese Maxey was really good. He had 21 points. He probably needs it. Killian Tilly was good, but he needs it. Jordan Wara is an interesting one, just as a note. He had 30 ball. He took
Jordan's
shots.
Chucking right now.
Yeah. Like, I mean, he was 14 for 28, but he did have 30. Just don't bury the headline too much.
Did you see today as well?
I did not see today. What was today? Another 22-1. Yeah,
Jordan's chucking.
That's interesting. He's a shooter, and shooters shoot, and he's living up to that reputation.
Oh boy, I think that we've hit everyone that we need to hit at this point. Okay, the final category is surprises. I'm glad you brought up Tyrell Terry, because to me, Tyrell Terry like fits the surprise category maybe a little bit more than the this guy's too good for summer league category. Tyrell Terry looked really, really good, I thought, in that first game for Dallas. He was like, he and Eugene Omorugyi were really the only two that I thought like looked even remotely close.
Yeah, I only saw highlights of that game, so I'm not going to go like a fake recap, but in the stuff I saw, he did kind of look, he looked bigger, physically stronger, definitely from the last year and coming off screens and pulling up with more confidence.
Yeah, totally. And meanwhile, Tyrell Terry also, shout out Tyrell Terry, just like creating controversy, you know, taking this back that he committing to Stanford was the best decision he'd ever made.
What a weird time to do that. Did we miss something? Did Stanford like not put his like mural on the wall or something? Like, where is this coming from? Was there any follow up? I saw the initial tweet that a friend who shall not be named sent. But like, what does that even mean?
I don't know. I don't know.
Okay.
Shout out Tyrell Terry. Tyrell Terry is like a great kid too. Like awesome, awesome kid. So for Stanford to have wronged him in this way, I feel personally affronted on Tyrell's behalf.
Well, Stanford now has Zaire Williams falling out and has Harrison Ingram coming in. So Stanford has it figured out too. We got to give them a little bit of credit. They evaluate properly.
They do a great job evaluating. The Stanford staff, it's weird, like we know, both of us know people on the Stanford staff, and we like people on the Stanford staff for sure. And you know, I don't know how much you've gotten to know Tyrell, because he played on the Adidas circuit, but I've talked to him a few times and thought he was a really great dude, like really nice kid. So yeah, it's a weird one there with the Stanford thing with Tyrell.
Yeah, internet can make people crazy. Maybe he's out in Vegas just bored trying to stir some stuff up.
It's probably true. Okay. Other pleasant surprises. I'll give you the floor on one.
I'm going to go similar draft class and similar positionally. I'm going to go with Trey Jones from San Antonio. 29 minutes, he had 23 points, 4 rebounds, 3 assists. And sometimes the Spurs guys just take time. And I love the fit on draft night and knew it wouldn't be an overnight transition. He looked at home out there. He was scoring. He was finding shooters when he beat the first guy and help came. He showed a lot of toughness out of pick and roll, playing through bumps. And when he did get downhill into the lane, he was the first to kind of strike this man. Like, he'd hit the guy, then pull through, hit some open threes. I like the trajectory he's on for next season.
Yeah, no, I agree. He looks like he could be their backup point guard next season. And with some of the discussions that you see about, like, they may still be looking to trade one of their guards, one of their younger guards that are just about to kick into these deals, or DeJounte Murray, who's now on a 4-year, $64 million deal. Wouldn't surprise me if they make a move and open up some minutes for Trey Jones. I don't know that opening up minutes for Trey Jones is their goal, but I do think that it wouldn't surprise me if Trey Jones gets more minutes next year for sure.
Yeah, selfishly, I was happy too, because I rated him a little bit higher than consensus. I think it was about the 20s for last year's draft, and being able to do some of this on the NBA level, it makes some of the evaluation authentic and actually work, I guess.
Yeah, no, I had Trey Jones as a top 20 guy last year. I'm a fan of Trey Jones. I think Trey Jones is good. So I'm glad to see him do well. A guy that I wanted to bring up, Omer Yurtseven. I'm surprised by this. I did not expect Omer Yurtseven to earn his way into a guaranteed contract. And he has, by the way. Like, Miami is giving him a full year guaranteed. I am, I was pretty blown away by his play so far.
Well, another one who, like, when he went to NC State, he was a huge recruit, like huge, like program-changing recruit. He was fine. Then he goes to Georgetown, and then he spent last year in the G League. I think it was with Oklahoma City Blue. And, again, fine. And then he had, like, 25 and 15 in back-to-back games. He didn't do anything this last one. I think he was just okay. I don't know what happened the fourth quarter. I think I watched through about three quarters.
He was pretty in that Memphis game, you mean?
Okay.
Yeah,
Yes.
He had 23 and 11 again today. Yeah, so, he was really good.
Wow. Okay. Then maybe he's piecing the whole thing together. I was just surprised coming off the season he had last year in the G League, where I believe it was like 15 and 9, which is great, like good numbers. But his deal was 2 years guaranteed. Is that right?
I think it might be one. I think he and Struess got the same deal. It's a 2-year deal with one guaranteed.
One's not as bad, but he looks almost like a different player. He looks like the prospect he was when he was hyped up to go to NC State.
Yeah, no, I mean, he was one of the best players in Europe. It was like a very similar situation to Santi Aldama, who won the what was it, the U19, U18?
Yeah, 2018 MVP? U18 MVP, I think. Yeah,
2019 U18 UMVP. Yeah.
There you go. Wait, eights or nines are mixed up.
Yeah, similar level prospect to that, where he was one of the best players in Europe coming over, decided to go the college route with NC State, got caught up in the disaster zone that was NC State, unfortunately, under Mark Gottfried. Kind of declared for the draft, decided to return to NC State to play for Kevin Keats. Kind of works, but wasn't really what he was looking for. Went to play for Patrick Ewing at Georgetown. Mm-hmm. Was very productive, but was abhorrent defensively. Like,
fine.
Fine
for that league, fine for what they need him to be as a 12th year senior or whatever he was. Fine.
He was terrible defensively. Like, he was
right, but it wasn't. You still saw pieces of why he was so esteemed.
Oh, totally.
As a prospect.
Yeah. Oh, so skilled, like great hands, particularly. Really good touch, great footwork. You could absolutely see the signs there, but. I mean, he even looks a little bit better defensively, looks a little bit more confident. I still have questions about how that's going to look at the next level. But, yeah, like, it's a valid signing for Miami to take a shot on him, I think.
As a backup with 1 year. Why not?
Yeah, I actually quite like the signing, if we're being honest. I think it makes a lot of sense to take a flyer on Yurtseven and just see where it goes. You know, like you said, like he had a good year with the Oklahoma City Blue in the G League bubble. He shot 63% from the field, you know, averaged 15.2 and 9.3 points per game. But this he looks like a bit of a different player this year, just in terms of confidence, in terms of skill level. He is the best big man right now in the Las Vegas Summer League in terms of offensive ability, other than maybe Şengün.
Oh, I was waiting for the Şengün hanger there.
I mean, he's ahead of, like, right now he's ahead of Evan Mobley offensively, I think.
Yeah, Evan Mobley's played two professional games, kind of, like, too light. This guy has played in the G League for a year. He's been through the rigors a little bit more.
Well, and he's 250 pounds.
Like, and he's, Evan Mobley's like, still trying to, like, figure out how his feet work underneath him. And, like, totally. I think the KJ Martin block was, like, a shock to his system. Like, whoa, boy. Like, I got to do this differently.
Right. And like, I'm not, like, I don't mean that negatively about Evan Mobley. Like, it's just going to take time for him to get stronger and everything. Like, Yurtseven is almost 24 years old and is, like, ready to go. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So,
big difference.
Yeah. It's just a huge difference in terms of experience level and confidence and everything like that. He's been exceptional. I am very impressed with what I've seen from him so far.
Yeah. We'll have to see where it goes.
All right, a couple other pleasant surprises from you?
I have a pleasant surprise, just kind of rookie-ish. Not necessarily a surprise for maybe you or I, but maybe for the general public, is Jeremiah Robinson Earl was a good one for me, because we put him a little bit higher than most. I did anyway. The time the draft rolled around, he didn't have a great combine. He's not like a great testing guy. He's just a very, very solid basketball player. He doesn't hurt you. The first game, he went 6 for 12 from the field. He moves the ball, can get you a bucket when needed. The jumper looked better. He looked like he belonged out there. Whereas sometimes guys that are picked in that range, and we've talked about it, there's just an adjustment period. For him, like the Thunder like moved some picks to go up and get him, and now kind of like, oh, well, that makes sense, I guess.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you on him. Okay, next up for me is going to be an undrafted guy that I really like. I'm going to stick with the Heat. Marcus Garrett, I think, has been pretty good.
You can't quit Marcus Garrett.
I can't quit Marcus Garrett. I was higher on Marcus Garrett than everyone else pre-draft.
Yes.
He looks really good defensively. He looks really good in terms of just like doing every single little thing that Miami is asking of him. And he looks every bit of like a potential like eighth man in the NBA who comes in defensively and hopefully can improve as a 3-point shooter down the road.
He hit a big three down the stretch here. It's always going to be the shooting, the defense and get him on the floor, the offense and keep him there. Eight is probably a little bit above my range for him right now. I see why you would value him, but hey, maybe a few more games he can get close to that spot if he's able to score too.
Yeah, no, I mean, he's going to have to continue to develop as a scorer. Having said that, like today's game, he had 13 points and 8 rebounds and like generally wreaked havoc on defense. Like he looks like everything that is a Miami Heat basketball player, right?
Yes, for sure.
In terms of at least what they look for in terms of like their system and getting guys in. Like he should be on a two-way deal for them, I think.
Well, we've also rattled off like three guys we really like. So their roster management and creation, it gets a thumbs up from us too.
Well, here's the thing too. And this comes from me like having had conversations with agents about Miami. Like everyone tries to get their guys in Miami because they really trust the developmental system there. It's not an accident that all of Marcus Garrett, Dejan Giroux, RJ Nembhard, DJ Stewart, Micah Potter, I guess to an extent, although I don't love Micah Potter, Javonte Smart, and Drew Smith. That's seven guys that went undrafted this year, all of whom, except for Potter, were on my top 100, ended up in Miami. It's because Miami is coveted by agents due to their track record developmentally.
Yeah, it's not a bad vacation to pop into on the road during the season when it gets cold in the Northeast.
Well, the problem with that, though, is you know where Miami's G League team is?
I don't. Where is it?
It is in good old Sioux Falls.
Oh, that's right. Well, that's when you said not the age, not the primary, send the secondary. Like, hey, he's gonna go check you out. Good dinner.
The Sioux Falls Skyforce.
I'm gonna meet you at Lib down in Miami. I won't be at Sioux Falls. Once you make the big roster, we'll send down the big guns.
Sorry, we are not going to Sioux Falls. Good old South Dakota. Oh boy. sorry, South
Dakota. I got one more. South Dakota. I got one more as I was scrolling through the second round. Well, actually, a couple rapid fire. Sandro, Mama Kielashvili's been good. Aaron Wiggins, I think, has been pretty good. Jericho Sims should not have been drafted 58th. And now, can we officially say that was craziness?
Yeah, that was nuts. Yeah, he was a top 50 guy for sure.
He's been Jericho Sims, rebounding, running the floor, tearing the rim off on lobs, showing he has a floater, apparently. And it's just it fits what the Knicks were doing. He's an energy big that fills in with scoring guards and wings around him, where he doesn't have to do anything. He can just be the garbage man, the get up and down, block some shots, dunk, and that's what you want in a backup big.
Yeah, he's a top 50 guy. I don't know. Like I don't get why he went 58th or wherever he went. Like, go undrafted. Like, let's find your spot. I guess maybe like the Knicks were his spot, right? But I don't know. My last guy was Caleb Holmesley. out of Washington. Went to Liberty. Is a guy that like really struggled with injuries throughout his high school and I think early career at Liberty. Emerged into like the Atlantic Sun Player of the Year, and Washington signed him like relatively late last year. He looks pretty good. Like, he looks like he might be an actual NBA player at this point. He's gonna have to keep shooting it at a pretty reasonable clip, but he's comfortable. He cuts off the ball. Like, he looks pretty good on defense. Definitely not more than like an eighth or ninth man as a wing, but looks like he could hit that level realistically.
Right. I saw the positive pub. They played after the late game last night, so I have not watched that game, just to be completely transparent there, but have followed along, and it seemed consistent with what other kind of analysts, evaluators are saying about the way he's played out there. The numbers are good. I mean, he's obviously scored and not missed a ton, and you want that for somebody that's going to come off the bench.
Okay. Do you have any other, you have no more guys that...
I mean, I have plenty of guys. We don't have to get crazy, but Chris Duarte, I think, has been really good. I know he's 24, so he should be good, but just feasting on younger guys. We can't go a podcast without really mentioning Josh Primo. I was encouraged with Salt Lake City. There's flashes. He's got a chance. It's going to take some time. Trey Murphy is awesome, I guess. 26 points, 9 rebounds, 6-9 from 3. I felt like he was just unleashed from the slower system he played in, and now he's been activated to explore the offensive game. Jalen Johnson's been okay. Bones Highland has been good. Cam Thomas has scored it. Overall, my takeaway is that I know it's the summer league. We shouldn't get too wild with our analysis, but the draft looks pretty good. Like, it looks like a pretty good crop of talent.
No, I agree with you. I think this draft looks really, really good. There's no other way to put it. This draft looks really strong. Okay, Penny, now that the season's over, have you jumped back into the movie scene?
I actually have. Some movies, some TV, a little balance. I started White Lotus on HBO Max. I still haven't started it yet. Yeah, 2 episodes into that. It's interesting. I'm trying to see where we're going there. The big one was I watched Val, about Val Kilmer, the kind of autobiography that he did. And the backstory is Val Kilmer has, like, had throat cancer, and now he talks through like a voice box, and I didn't know that, so I was kind of taken aback, because the preview I watched, he filmed everything for his life, so he's got like 30 years of just like video cameras. He like one of the first video cameras, I guess. So here's him in the back with Sean Penn and Kevin Bacon, and now it's this really sad but encouraging journey about how he's going to these events and just like signing Top Gun posters and going to like Tombstone conventions and still trying to make a living despite not being the person he was, but still trying to fulfill his life and be a dad to his kids. So a tough watch, but it was really well done.
Yeah, I told you I was going to watch that yesterday and I just didn't. I'm going to watch it today, I think, and just be very sad, it feels like.
Sadish, because you see it and you see what, how much of a star he was and how much people respected him, but he was also kind of like to his own devices and method acting a little bit and just out there, and he's reflecting on the whole thing as he looks back at all these videos he's made.
Yeah. I think I've watched like 10 movies since last week.
Oh my God. 10 movies? I like make it almost like a homework assignment now to watch one or two in case you call me for the bullpen to do a pod, but 10 is like outrageous.
Yeah, I think I've watched like 10. So I watched Black Widow finally, which was great.
Okay.
We are the foremost Florence Pugh podcast, by the way, Penny. Just letting you know that ahead of
time. Definitely for the draft, yes.
Yeah, definitely for among draft podcasts, we're 100% the foremost Florence Pugh fan base. yes. No question. I watched A Classic Horror Story, which is on Netflix, if you've seen that.
I haven't. I've scrolled through a bunch of stuff on Netflix, but I don't think I've seen that.
Yeah, it's like an Italian movie. It didn't really work for me. It's like an Italian horror movie, obviously. Suicide Squad, the new Suicide Squad movie.
John Cena doing interviews, like wearing the costume is a choice. How was that? How was round 2 of Suicide Squad? Did Suicide Squad 1 rule for you?
No, it didn't. I didn't think it was great.
I was so excited for part 1. I started like opening night, like IMAX with my buddies, and we looked at each other at the end like, I can't believe we did this. I can't believe we went opening night, like waited in line to see Suicide Squad.
This one is really good. This one is like legitimately really good. just so funny and so dumb and all of the right jokes. It's what you wanted the first Suicide Squad movie to actually be.
Okay. Well, look, the Suicide Squad 1 cast, like, had me. You had me in there. But, like, yeah. The Joker thing was weird, and Will Smith was fine, and Margot Robbie I liked, but it was, like, missing some connective tissue between characters and script.
Okay. The next one is The Boy Behind the Door, which is a horror movie on Shudder that just came out this year. Surprisingly good for what had to be, like, the lowest budget, like, movie I've seen this year. Did you ever watch True Blood?
Of course. I love True Blood. Merlot's.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sookie Stackhouse. That was
that was your shit, apparently.
Years and years ago. Oh, yeah. I was in on that. All on that.
So
it
do you remember
way off the cliff, but you can't pull back. You can't, like, you're 4 seasons in, like, I gotta stay now. Couldn't jump ship.
I jump shipped after like 4 or 5, I'm not gonna lie to you. But the woman who played, do you remember Eric's friend, the vampire woman? What the fuck was her name? I don't remember.
What the older one with the blonde hair?
Yes. Yeah.
Yes. I can see her face. Yeah.
So she's the main, she's one of the main people in this, and it's really good. She's really good in it. I saw Pig with Nicolas Cage.
Oh my gosh. I scrolled by that and I paused on it for a second. I said, no way.
It's so good.
Oh, why? Why is it so good?
So it's not like a, it's a drama. Like, it is not a, so the whole premise is that people come and steal his pig that he uses to hunt truffle mushrooms. Mm-hmm. And then he goes and tries to find the pig. I kind of went in assuming it was going to be like Nicolas Cage's John Wick, except going to find a pig.
National treasure for a truffle pig.
So it's 100% not that. It's like a drama. It is like devastating in the right ways and like thoughtful in the right ways. The second half of the movie is like unbelievable. It's like this like grief stuff. It's really good. It's really, really good.
Is this going to start the Nicolas Cage like reconnaissance, like the Matthew McConaughey thing when he made Mud and Dallas Buyers Club? And you kind of reassessed and said, wow, like Matthew McConaughey is actually really good consistently. Or is it just like a dip in the toe?
It's one of the best performances I've seen from an actor this year. Like, look, there are going to be a crazy number of movies that come out starting in like October because a lot of things got held back this year. Mm-hmm. Or from 2020, right? So
right.
I don't think he's going to get nominated for an Oscar for it. He would not look out of place being nominated for an Oscar for this movie.
Maybe I'll have to circle back. It's unfortunate because I do like a lot of Nicolas Cage stuff, but sometimes you see the title and just the pictures like him in like this copper background with like weird long hair, and I didn't even really give it a chance. I'll be truthful to that.
Yeah, it has 97% on Rotten Tomatoes right now.
Wow.
Yeah, like it's
that's
really
that's generally a good barometer, because when you're going over it and it says like 42%, you have to make a choice. If I'm going to do this for 2 hours and know that whatever, like 58% of people hated this thing.
Yeah, it's at like 4. It's like 4.0 right now on Letterboxd, which like if you know the Letterboxd scene, those people can be a bit vicious in terms of things. So to get a 4 out of 5 is like very strong.
Huge.
I watched Blowout, which is a Brian De Palma movie. Just the last 20 minutes of that movie are perfect in every way. Have you seen Chaos Walking, like the poster for that with Tom Holland and Daisy Ridley?
I'll look it up now with my phone in my hands, but I don't think I have.
It's the worst movie I've seen this year. Don't watch it.
Really set me up. Chaos Walking. I'm looking at, I have not seen that. No.
Yeah, it features what I think are the most animal murders I've seen in any movie in a decade.
Wow. And the budget was $100 million.
Oh, it's wild. Like a total, it's a failure across the board. Like no idea how this happened. The movie I was texting you about though was The Unholy.
This is a bad one.
It features the Cary Elwes, who is Robin Hood, Men in Tights, and the guy in Saw, right? Like,
yep.
Very much from London, Cary Elwes. He's doing a Boston accent as a priest in this movie.
Can't do that. Can't do
it. It's one of, like, honestly, there's a scene where, like, he literally turns and bows to the camera and, like, starts talking in a Boston accent, like, as a soliloquy. It's the funniest thing I've seen in a movie this year.
The Boston accent is, you have it or you don't. It's not something you can act. It's not something that you can fake. And, like, I don't really have one. So if you pluck me in somewhere, no one's going to say, you're from Boston. A lot of my family does. But even, like, watching, like, when you watch Boston movies and when, like, Jack Nicholson in The Departed does, like, the Boston accent.
Yeah, I'm glad that you brought up Nicholson in The Departed, because that's what I was going to say.
Don't do this. Don't do it. Because Jack Nicholson's awesome. But, like, he didn't need that. But he's kind of this, like, weirdo, Whitey Bulger-ish type character. Like, whatever. I get it. And what people don't really recognize either is, like, when Ben Affleck in Good Will Hunting says, my boy's wicked smart, he's making a joke to, like, ham that up. And that's not really, like, how he would talk or you'd hear out at a bar. So when guys and girls go completely over the top in movies, it's just, like, cringy for me.
Yeah, it's tough. Like, what have you seen a good Boston accent in a movie?
Yeah, like Mark Wahlberg, who grew up here. Like, I hope you get it right. Like Matt Damon, like, you grew up, him and Ben Affleck grew up down the street. Like, when they're actually there and they've been around it. There's no way to, I'm trying to think of, like, another one. Because once in a while, people will have it. It's like, okay, that's not too bad. That's close.
Like, DiCaprio's in The Departed is not a disaster.
Not bad. That's actually a good call. That's not bad. You more spot the bad ones than the good ones, if that works.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. Like, I feel like I laugh at the bad ones, and I don't call out the good ones, which, like, is culture now, right? But, like,
I didn't want to laugh at Nicholson because, like, I was really into it. I really liked it. Then he started talking. Sometimes I was like, next line,
this is a choice. I'm trying to think if there are any other, like, Alec Baldwin's in The Departed is, like, off the rails.
Yeah, it's off the rails, but kind of like the weird uncle off the rails where you could, like, kind of see it. Like, the scene where he's, like, trying to find the rat and he's in the office and he's, like, yelling. It's like, I've kind of seen that once in a while. But it's all just, like, turned up to a 12. That's the problem. It's just it's so crazy.
And speaking of The Departed, so Ray Winstone, who's the guy who plays Frenchie in The Departed, right?
Yes.
By the way, like, pretty good Boston accent, I think. Like, he comes off as, like, being pretty genuine, I think, with the Boston accent in that movie. It maybe goes a little bit too British at times, but it's fine for the most part. He is, like, from London and, like, you know, similar deal with Cary Elwes. He's the main bad guy in Black Widow, and they have him doing a Russian accent.
The
crossover between British and Russian accent did not go well. And it's like, Ray Winstone has, like, a very heavy, like, English or like, Irish. Like, it borders on, like, Irish, it feels like, a lot of the time. And he could not get the Russian accent down in Black Widow. And it was a choice, and it was a gift that kept on giving as you watch Black Widow.
Oh. I do, like, I have no shot at acting ever or doing any accents, but I am always taken aback when the movie ends or the TV series ends and, like, Dominic West, who's McNulty on The Wire, he's McNulty,
oh,
right?
Yeah,
he's Baltimore,
yeah.
He's Baltimore cop, and then he doesn't speak, he's, like, British. He's like, oh my gosh, didn't know that was coming out of there. So I admire people who figure it out. And we can't
the
go
best
out
is,
without talking about Mayor, right? Mayor of Easttown. Kate Winslet felt authentic. That felt like that was part of that scene. And that's, like, her national tone.
The best one is Idris Elba from The Wire, right? Like,
oh,
Idris Elba is very British.
Yeah.
And he is not British in the
Wire. Charles Minor on The Office. Both of them.
Yeah. Like, he is a very good American accent.
Yes.
Idris Elba.
Incredible.
Okay. That's all I've got. That's what I've seen so far this week.
It's,
and I'm going to be...
Quite the haul.
Here's the thing, Penny. I'm in... Like, we're stuck right now. We're in lockdown. We can't leave the house, really. So what else am I going to do? I can't watch 8 summer league games a day. Like, I just can't do
it. I've tried. There's 2 on at the same time. I've tried to kind of go back and forth. And one game's ending, then it's like better prospects than the other. And it's, do I watch the end of this one or do I hop into the beginning? And then another one starts up and you're trying to squeeze it in. I get it. I'm still going to watch summer league despite this being the pod on it, but not as intensely because I just can't do it. I can't deal with the storylines changing by every possession.
Yeah, I just don't want to do it. Like, it's not good for me. Like,
Malachi Flynn just hit a 3 in the background, so I think that gives us kind of some validation that we're doing the right thing here.
We've got some cover. Okay. Penny, tell the people where they can find you on the internet.
Find me on Twitter. I'm hiding on the internet, Matt_Penny. Give me a follow. Give me a like. Well, hopefully we'll be back here soon. 2022 draft starts momentarily. The clock doesn't stop here. We're just on to more basketball.
We need Matt Penny right now is at 1,800 Twitter followers. We need to get that up to 2,000, guys. Come on. We got to. Yeah,
we'll just start buying some fake ones and you'll look in there and be like, why is just like these weird number letter combinations suddenly following you?
This man was in a video game. Matt Penny.
Yeah, it was. It was awesome too, because like we were so excited when we got it, because I can pass, I can't move on defense, but I can shoot. So I was so excited because I said, all right, it's my 3rd year, we're gonna be in a video game, we get it, we fire up the PlayStation 2. I'm like the worst player in the game. Like, could not be worse. I think I wore high socks. I think they had the high socks. And then in the game, as a shooter, I stunk. It broke me because crappy shooters in those old games, they don't like follow through. They just kind of like flick their hands, like put their arms down. And I had that shot. It couldn't have gone worse. So I did what everyone naturally would do. Made the creative player and cranked myself up to 99 and averaged about 40 points a game. That was the only way I could make myself feel better.
It'd be amazing if you like adjusted the roster and like just changed the shooting a little bit to where you were like a 70%, like a 70 out of 100 on shooting,
I think it was actually 2 games because I walked on them the next 2 years, and I think like accidentally. There's 360 Division I teams. People are going to make mistakes, especially video game programmers. I think I accidentally was like starting in one of them when we turned it on to. We're like, this is the best. And then, yeah, we were awful.
And then it was a disaster. Oh,
it was a disaster, correct.
Matt Penny is in a video game. This man needs to have over 2,000 followers by the next time we podcast. Go follow Matt Penny on Twitter, for the love of God. This has been the Game Theory Podcast. Please remember, rate, review, subscribe, do everything you can to support the show. So I'm taking vacation this summer. It's happening, right? My vacation starts on August 23rd. I am going to try and record like 6 podcasts or so to put out over the course of like next week, the week after that, the week after that, on teams off seasons, because my friends should be back from summer league. I should have the ability to record. We should be able to do some NBA offseason stuff then. That's my current plan. I can't promise anything right now. That's currently what I'm thinking.
Don't hold me to it.
Do not hold me to it. That's correct. But right now, that's what the plan is. I will still have podcasts for you even while I'm on vacation. I will not be responding to the internet. I will not be. I will literally just be posting the podcasts and dropping the bombs on my Twitter feed, and that is it. But I will be around next week, and I, you know, maybe Penny and I'll do like a recap of summer league. I don't know. We'll see. But until next time, we will talk soon. Bye.